You know, the way you spoke, it reminded me of those times when in school we used to write history papers. We used to mug up everything, put it out on the paper, and then after the paper, when anyone would ask, you'd be like, God knows what it was.
Malu, what kind of impact does this have for the sporting world? Obviously, specific for Russia and Belarus.
Not letting them participate will obviously impact their programs, the funding, the grants, the athlete development. If this restriction lasts for a few years, we do not know what will be the domino effect 10, 15 years down the line.
It isn't fair necessarily to place all of that pressure and all of that criticism on players individually, right? Daniel Medvedev is not sitting in the Russian parliament making decisions. Malu, I don't know if there's a person who loves Cristiano Ronaldo more. If you took Cristiano Ronaldo's name out of that episode, people might have thought you were describing Nelson Mandela or something.
Real Madrid are even interested in Haaland.
Diego Simeone is just the cleverest manager. He just knows how to maximize what he has.
This is what happens when it's a well-oiled machine. Whichever new component comes in, he knows what they have to do. He knows his job role, and that's about it.
Bayern Munich is the same concept of just German engineering efficiency. It's like a train that just keeps on moving forward. Hey everyone, and welcome back to another episode of All About Sports, the podcast, a podcast by the fans, for the fans. Today, you're joined by two of your co-hosts, Shubham Malu.
Hey guys.
And myself, Rishabh Krishnan. Before we get into this week's episode, a quick reminder of last week's episode. We covered a few different topics across the football space. Mazhar and Shubham actually spoke about the takeover of Chelsea, moving on from Roman Abramovich, some of the restrictions on the club currently financially, and how they're going to have to move forward into new ownership. More broadly, they also spoke about PSG's failures. Malu and I covered this on one of our initial episodes on the struggles they're going to face as a team, but they covered it again, how PSG struggled. And finally, they kind of covered a little bit about who the world's best footballers are. You know, I think we're moving to an era, maybe slowly moving past Ronaldo and Messi, and who are the new iconic players taking their place. So with that, let's get into this week's episode. It's strange because it's a little bit of a continuation on the Roman Abramovich conversation. We're going to start off talking about some of the restrictions that have been imposed across sports for Russian and Belarusian athletes. We're going to cover a few of the sports. There are a bunch of sports that have, you know, imposed restrictions. We're going to focus on a subset of those. And then we're going to go into the, you know, UEFA Champions League. We're going to talk about the teams still left in the Champions League who made it out of the round of 16 and some of our thoughts on who are going to be some big surprises, who do we think are going to go through. So, Malu, let me start off with the conversation on Russia, specifically what some sporting organizations are doing to restrict athletes from Russia and Belarus across, you know, some of these sports. Again, we're not going to go into, you know, the political conversation. This is more just focused on how sports is being used as a tool to restrict those two countries specifically. I did hear an interesting quote that I wanted to share. This is not my quote. I heard this from, I think, BBC or something, where they said, sports is one of the most important things amongst all the unimportant things. So I love that as a quote. And I think it's so accurate because obviously none of us think that sports is the most important thing in the world. But in its area and amongst the non-important things, it's super relevant. So let's get into what restrictions are imposed specifically for Russian and Belarusian athletes. I'm going to start off with the Paralympics because the Winter Paralympics recently concluded in Beijing. One of the restrictions that were imposed was actually none of the Belarusian and Russian athletes were not allowed to compete at the 2022 Winter Paralympics. They started off initially, the Paralympic Committee, saying they were going to allow Russian and Belarusian athletes to come there. They just couldn't, you know, participate under their flag. But with constant, you know, pressure from other countries and fearing the safety of the Russian and Belarusian athletes, they were eventually made the decision to not bring them on, and they couldn't actually compete. I'll move on then to football. FIFA and UEFA announced in a joint statement on February 28th, so it's been a bit of time now, that they've suspended all Russian international and club teams from their competitions until further notice. Anyway, there were no real Russian teams in the UEFA Men's or Women's Champions League, but in the Europa League, Spartak Moscow was supposed to play RB Leipzig. That game was cancelled. RB Leipzig automatically went through to the next round. From an international perspective, Russia was not able to play their World Cup playoff game against Poland that's scheduled for March 24th. So obviously a huge impact on both their international team, but also at the club level, they can't compete in any of the European competitions. I'll go on to Formula One and FIA as well. I'm going to run through these pretty quickly because I just kind of want to get through what's happening, and then we'll talk more about, you know, the impact it's going to have on the sporting world. Formula One has actually noted a few different things that are going to happen. One, they've canceled the race that's intended to happen in Russia. So the Russian Grand Prix that was originally scheduled for September 25th of this year has been canceled. They've also temporarily, on March 1st, they've actually temporarily excluded Russian or Belarusian FIA members from their responsibilities as elected officers or commission members. Another piece where, you know, which was specific to one team, Haas F1 have let go of their driver, Nikita Mazepin. And they've also given up their sponsorship with Yurakali, which I believe is a Russian-based organization. So that's specific to one team, but pretty significant. You know, if you're a Formula One team with two drivers, letting go of one team and their primary sponsor, Yurakali, if you watch F1, you'll see their name, you know, stamped all over their Haas car. Athletics, World Athletic Command. The World Athletics Council has announced new sanctions banning all athletes from Russia and Belarus from competing in the World Athletics Series events with immediate effect. Essentially, what this impacts is the World Athletics Championships in Oregon that are going to be in July 15th and the World Indoor Championships that are scheduled to begin on March 18th. Last off, I'm going to take a little bit of a breath. It felt like I was playing kabaddi. But anyway, last one before Mahendra Palo, I hand it off to you. Tennis, the International Tennis Federation on March 1st announced that with immediate effect, there was a suspension of the Russian Tennis Federation and the Belarus Tennis Federation from ITF membership and from participation in ITF international team competitions. What this affects is basically Russia and Belarus cannot compete in the 2022 Davis Cup or the 2022 Billie Jean King Cup. I'm not going to lie. I don't know what the Billie Jean King Cup is, but I guess they cannot participate in it anymore. And they've also released a joint statement saying that individuals, so if you're a Russian or Belarusian individual, you can still compete in ATP and WTA tournaments and at Grand Slams, which of course is going to affect players like Rublev, Medvedev. They can still participate. They will just not be allowed to participate under the Russian or Belarusian flag until further notice. Malu, that's everything that's going on. Again, this is a subset of the things that are going on, subset of sports. Malu, what kind of impact does this have to the sporting world? Obviously specific for Russia and Belarus, but more broadly for the sport world in general, even for countries outside of it. How big an impact is it? Because especially in Olympics, they're a pretty strong force.
Firstly, to start off with, I felt like I'm on one of those news channels which is doing a top 25 articles in 60 seconds. That was a lot of information.
And I don't know if anyone processed anything. It just
went, yeah. You know, the way you spoke, it reminded me of those times when in school we used to write history papers. We used to mug up everything, put it out on the paper, and then after the paper, when anyone would ask, you'd be like, God knows what it was. It was literally like one of those long essays. But anyway, coming to everything that's happening with Russia. So firstly, I would like to say, you know, if you think about it, the sports scene in Russia has been going through a difficult time, not just right now, even in the past, either because of the sports federation by themselves or now because of Putin. Previously, there was this huge Russian scandal about doping that was happening, widespread doping that was happening, perhaps doping that was even encouraged by Russian doctors or federations. And there were a lot of people involved in it, which led to a lot of athletes getting banned during Olympics or something along those lines, if I remember. And now, obviously, because of what the government has done, it has had an impact on sports. So what I make out of it is, I think all the decisions that have been taken by all the different federations, governing bodies of different sports, I think it has been taken with the mindset to isolate Russia. That also, like, even all the economic sanctions, they've been made to isolate Russia, to put Russia in a corner so that they stop this war in Ukraine. I think the same things with sport. And like you said, you know, like, sport is one of the most important things amongst the unimportant subjects of life. I think this sort of pressure on Russian sports and Russian federations, at the end of the day, all of them are global organizations. They have massive cultural importance in our society on an international level. So not letting them participate will obviously impact their programs, will impact, I don't know, the funding, the grants, the athlete development, the future potential of these athletes, because they need to compete at those levels. And if they aren't allowed to, it obviously hampers it. And you never know, you know, if this restriction lasts for a few years, we do not know what will be the domino effect 10, 15 years down the line. Because once, like even athletes, I'm sorry to put this analogy, but they are almost like what you produce in a factory, right? If there's a sudden break in the supply chain, it will hamper the future prospects of whatever athletes come out. Perhaps the wrong example, but athletes need to compete at those highest levels. Otherwise, it will impact the system. But having said that, I personally feel some of the sanctions that have been put in place, I can understand why these people have put the sanctions. But the only thing I don't understand is, as long as they're sanctioning the Russian federations, like Russia can't participate in the Olympics, or Russian players can participate, but they can't represent the flag or represent Russia. That's something I understand. But when they have specifically started sanctioning or started eliminating Russian players, like for example in F1, the Russian, just because he's Russian and he's not allowed to participate, I don't agree with that. I think that's a bit too harsh. It's not his fault that he's a Russian citizen. It's not his fault that he has a Russian passport. So I think that is a bit too much, and I do not see the justification for that. But otherwise, yeah, I think based on what's happening right now, I totally understand why these sanctions have been put in place.
And it's you know, you make a great point, Malu, because I think, you know, the truth is not everyone who's, you know, a Russian athlete or Russian player necessarily agrees with every single decision that's made, or frankly has any part to play in that decision-making process, whether or not, however you feel about this issue. So you're right, it is very harsh. And exactly like you said, I think that was a case that was just a team making a decision. It wasn't, I think, a broader FIA or federation-wise decision. But it is a good note both to fans like us, as well as to other people who just watch and enjoy sports. It isn't fair necessarily to place all of that pressure and all of that criticism on players individually, right? Daniel Medvedev is not sitting in the Russian parliament making decisions. Rublev is not.
See, I could understand if Ukraine would say that no Russian player or no Russian citizen can come and play in their country. That is right. Something I understand.
Right, but right.
Why does, like for example, when there are tensions between India and Pakistan decide that no player from the other country can come and play in their country. Fair enough, I understand, because the tension is between those two countries. But why would a US sanction India or Pakistan that your players can't? Like that doesn't make sense to me.
That's right. And you're right, because you're covering a lot of the national pride by not allowing you to participate under that country's name. They're not allowing them to use that flag. So individually targeting players does seem in a lot of ways harsh. I do want to call out, this isn't unique. You know, I was kind of recently watching Bad Sport on Netflix. Very good, great documentary show. I really,
what is it called?
Bad Sport. It's all about like this, you know, match fixing and corruption that's existed in sport. And specifically, the episode I'm on right now is about Hansi Kroenier. And one of the things that they spoke about is, and I actually don't think I knew this, so South African cricket, you know, South Africa could not compete in international cricket tournaments till 1991, or between 1970, I think, and 1991, because of apartheid. So because of apartheid in South Africa, they weren't allowed to compete in international cricket tournaments. So this isn't a unique situation where sports is used as a tool to sort of focus on, you know, have, you know, used as a tool in a broader political mission. So it's not unique. We've seen this before in the South African context as well. Obviously, like you said, you're right. You know, you become a, you know, another thing that you mentioned is the Russian doping situation that's happened in the last few years has meant that Russia has just been through a continual stage of real sporting disaster.
Evil, yeah.
Exactly, in the recent few years. So it's going to be an interesting situation. We know, obviously, a huge amount of funding shifts that are going to occur. Do watch last week's episode to learn more about, you know, the effect that it has on Chelsea, as well as teams like United with Gazprom kind of coming out of the picture. So it's going to be an interesting phase for Russian as well as Belarusian athletes. Again, a quick note that not everyone is necessarily involved with it. So, you know, as fans, maybe we may not have the right to necessarily. And in fact, someone called out to me, Rublev, the Russian tennis player, as tensions were kind of heating up in Russia and Ukraine, one of the things he wrote on those cameras as he walked off was, "No war, please," or something to that effect. So a beautiful message. Again, not every player is necessarily on the same boat. But Malu, that's obviously a sad situation. I don't want to cover too much more into it. I think we covered what's sort of going on in the major sports. I do want to shift over now to a slightly lighter conversation. UEFA Champions League. You and Mazhar covered this a little bit last week in PSG's failures. United's out. At the time that it was recorded last time, United was still in it. Thankfully, United has been knocked out. So we have our final quarterfinals in place. Balu, how are you feeling about the quarterfinals? What are the fixtures that you are excited for in this year's quarterfinals of the Champions League?
Oh, definitely. The fixture that is Real Madrid versus... who are they playing? Real Madrid versus... I think that's the
big Chelsea, one. Right? Isn't it Chelsea?
Real Madrid... Chelsea. Real Madrid, yeah. Real Madrid versus Chelsea. I think that's the only fixture I'm looking forward to, because the other fixtures, I kind of think I already know the result. It's Liverpool-Benfica. Unless it's like something crazy that happens, I think Liverpool will win. Then it is Man City versus...
It is Man City versus Atletico Madrid.
Oh, that's a good fixture. And actually, the reason I think that's a good fixture is because it is two very different playing styles. We know Simeone is someone who likes to defend, and probably get those one or two quick chances. And when I saw them against United, they are quick in their transitions. They're very vertical in their transitions. And they were pretty clinical. Like every time they had a chance, it looked like as if they're going to do something. Now, that's another thing, that United's defense is so shit that we make everyone look very good. But having said that, I think that'll be a great game, because Pep is all about control and playing the entire game in the opponent's half. And Simeone is great at getting the opponent into his half, maintaining a low block, defending, and getting a chance to attack.
Listen, I love Simeone, but that guy's teams play so dirty. They foul so much in key positions. Yeah. I'm sure Pep is going to get super frustrated.
Yeah, for sure. But no, I think that's a game I'm looking forward to. So Real Madrid versus Chelsea. And Man City versus Atletico, I'm looking forward to. I think Bayern will win. I don't think they have a tough fixture.
You're right. It is interesting. You know, with the draw, you sometimes get you hope for a lot of interesting fixtures with a lot of teams coming through. But I think with PSG playing Real Madrid in the first round, United playing Atletico Madrid in the first round, we sort of eliminated two of the big names that maybe could have gone through into this round.
If you think about it, the semi-final could potentially be a derby between Real Madrid and Atletico if they both win. So that could be interesting. I think Real Madrid will be able to beat Chelsea. I think so. And the reason I think so is, firstly, see, a lot of stuff is going on behind the scenes for Chelsea. So maybe that might psychologically have an impact on some players, or you never know what happens. But the most important thing is Real Madrid has been performing so well off late. So I think if they manage to keep their squad fit, the way Benzema, Modric, Cruz, all these guys are performing, it's kind of insane. So I personally feel they should go through.
No, I was going to say again, I'm going to sound like this annoying guy who keeps plugging episodes, but do watch last week's episode, because I think you'll cover that very well, especially for Real Madrid, how they've worked really well with Benzema, Modric and Cruz were together. One other quick shout out to last week's episode. Malu, I don't know if there's a person who loves Cristiano Ronaldo more. If you took Cristiano Ronaldo's name out of that episode, people might have thought you were describing Nelson Mandela or something. I have never heard someone with more love for Ronnie. That one soliloquy, I'm going to call it, that you had about Ronaldo was the most impassioned speech. Not all unfair, to be honest. Not all unfair. Some of it I thought was very reasonable. But I saw a real heart on your sleeve. I'm confused. I'm sure there's a battle that goes on at home between wife versus Ronaldo. I'm sure it's a close battle.
Bro, that battle I can never win. I can just never win it.
But anyhow, Malu, you covered it. I think that is the fixture to look out for. It's the competition of the money bags. Chelsea, not really the money bags anymore, but it's going to be a really interesting fixture. And I think one big shout out I want to make to Real Madrid, you know, I think when the La Liga has gone through all the chaos that they've had to both Barcelona and Real Madrid, having to make huge decisions in terms of pay cuts, leaving all their players out, they've managed to really stay so solid. They're top of the La Liga. They beat the best squad in the Champions League. And it's an interesting combination of old and young, right? Exactly like you mentioned, you have Benzema, Modric, Cruz leading the kind of experienced front. But you still have Vinicius Jr. coming through. They obviously signed Camavinga from Rennes. I forgot who he played for before. From Rennes over the summer. Mbappe is looking like he's going to be a Real Madrid player sooner rather than later. Eventually, it seems like it's pretty much in the stars that he'll be moving
Madrid
over.
Madrid are looking good even for next season with Mbappe. And it's very strong rumors. In fact, I was watching an episode for Rio Ferdinand's podcast with Fabrizio Romano on it, where he mentioned that Real Madrid are even interested in Haaland. So Real Madrid are like serious about the next summer transfer window. And Mbappe, okay, it's on a free, but big wages, but still you're saving some money on the transfer. And they're interested in Haaland, who just has a release clause. So, dude, if Real Madrid are, yeah, not only the fact that the squad right now is performing very well, with the plans they have for the future, and with Ancelotti as manager, who's amazing, I think these guys are again going to become serious threats.
You know, it hits at what Mazhar said last week. Real Madrid is again one of those clubs that's too big to fail. They just are unwilling to be bad for too long. They will find a way. Florentino Perez is just such a huge figure in the Spanish footballing world and frankly in the global footballing world. He will find a way to, you know, make Real Madrid get back to their previous ways some way or the other. But I mean, there's no question. That's definitely the marquee fixture. I think, like you said, Manchester City, Atletico Madrid could be an interesting fixture as well. Diego Simeone is just the cleverest manager that exists here, right? He's not, I wouldn't say he's necessarily the best manager, but he's the most clever. And he just knows how to maximize what he has. You know, he's someone who doesn't necessarily have the best resources. He doesn't necessarily have the best squad. But he finds a way, especially in the Champions League, to stretch that team out to the best that they can. And he's going to make it so annoying for Pep Guardiola. I exactly like what I was saying earlier, Malu. Diego Simeone is one of my favorite coaches. I can't stand watching Atletico Madrid. Barring watching Joao Felix, that team is so infuriating in how they break up play and how messy and dirty they get in the midfield.
I literally saw that last week. The moment they scored the goal, I think Ralf Rangnick even said in his interview that I don't think there was a moment where they played football for more than 2 minutes. Every time they would fall down, they would waste time to do something or the other. But then I tell you what, at the end of the day, I, as a United fan, feel bitter about it. But the fact is, it is just being a smart tactician. If you know that this is the way you can get your team through to the next round, why not, man?
And frankly, he has to. You know, at the end of the day, he doesn't have that great a squad. Joao Felix is a phenomenal talent and he's really, really good. But that squad is not at the same level.
I feel maybe this, I don't know, like maybe this is a bit of an over-exaggerated comparison. But I feel this Atletico versus Man City match almost reminds me of Inter under Mourinho versus Barcelona under Pep, where Inter just defended and scored like 2 goals. And I think they were down to 10 men also. And then Mourinho had that mad celebration on the pitch. In their philosophies, Mourinho and Simeone are sort of similar, where both of them would like to defend and just hit on the counter. And Pep being Pep, he's been the same in all his clubs. And I just think it could be like one of those games, you know, where Atletico just nick a goal and then they just defend extremely well. And there could be an upset in the cards.
This is one of those games where it's really just a tactical battle, right? We absolutely love seeing these two managers who have history. They've played in the same league together. I think they probably had a couple of years overlapping in La Liga, I'm assuming.
I can't
remember, but I would assume they've had a couple of years. They will get into it. It's going to be a dirty game. Again, I don't know if I'm going to enjoy watching it, but Man City is a beautiful team to watch. Whether or not you're a fan of Man City, they're a phenomenal team to watch play. So I'm pretty excited for that one. Malu, I know we're going to get into predictions, but my favorites are Bayern Munich. They look so good.
Oh, Bayern Munich for the Champions League?
For the Champions League, boss. I think they've it in the bag. They're, you know, a friend and I were talking about this specifically for Formula One, how Mercedes have become this dominant team in Formula One. Obviously, they didn't win last year, but they've still been dominant for multiple years. They are like, Bayern Munich is the same concept of just German engineering efficiency. They just, no qualms. They just keep going. It's like a machine. It's like a train that just keeps on moving forward. There's not a lot of noise. There's not a lot of like drama going on behind the scenes. They're just chugging along in every single season. They just look so good. Robert Lewandowski is Robert Lewandowski. Gnabry, they just signed... who they signed. They signed someone in the summer who I've forgotten now. But they're looking fantastic. Villarreal, to me, have no shot.
Of course not.
I think I was looking at the odds. And like, this is the one where the disparity in odds is like by far super skewed. It's like plus 500 for Villarreal, minus 900 for Bayern Munich. So,
wow,
way off. Interestingly, actually, it's even more skewed. I thought this might be more skewed than Benfica-Liverpool, but apparently Benfica-Liverpool, the odds are even more skewed. It's like plus 700 for Benfica, minus 1600 for Liverpool. So if you're a Liverpool hater, you want to try and make some money, you think there's a chance, go for Benfica, but I don't see it happening, Malu. Malu, I remember we discussed this at the start of the season. We spoke about it, and I remember I made the mistake of saying, I think Liverpool might struggle in the group stage. Of course, they go 18-0, get 18 points. Malu, I want to quickly ask you about just Liverpool. We spoke a little bit about how, you know, African Cup of Nations, they're so reliant on Sadio Mane and Mohamed Salah. Can you talk just about the resilience of this team? Again, maybe it's just this German efficiency. They just keep going on.
So, one thing that I would say about Liverpool, especially considering the fact that I've seen them play live now, I think that what's the most amazing part of their team is the way they use their fullbacks. Like, literally, when I saw Liverpool versus Arsenal, and because I had a very good view of the pitch, Alexander Trent used to literally play like as if he's another right winger. And okay, Robertson wasn't pushing up that
I like his new name, by the way. Alexander Trent. I like how you mix it up a little bit.
What's his name? Alexander Trent?
Isn't it Trent Alexander-Arnold?
Okay, whatever it is. I'm sure the viewers in this
case understand who I'm talking about. Pretty close. Huh. Yeah. I just want to make fun of you so I found something. Go ahead.
But yeah, another thing is the left back also, Robertson. Robertson, right? This I'm not screwing up for sure.
You got right. It's not son of Robert. You're right.
But Robertson, he wasn't pushing up a lot because, okay, Saka was there for him to defend. And Saka was really good that game. But I think the way Liverpool used their fullbacks, because even their second goal came through Robertson. And their first goal, I think, was a pass from Trent. I think so.
I'm blanking. I think you're right, though. I'm blanking, but yes. So. Yeah.
But yeah, I think that team, I think the main focal points of those teams, of Liverpool's team, is their wing backs. So yeah, but I totally agree with you in terms of the way they are just on a roll. After their win against Arsenal, one of the reporters said that mid-Jan, you guys were 14 points off City. And now mid-March, you guys are 1 point off City. It just goes to show that this team has character. And see, this is what happens when you are in a team that's winning trophies. They won the Champions League. They won the Premier League. They won the League Cup. They haven't made too many changes to the team. The core of the team is super solid. They have a manager who knows what he wants to do. Whichever player they sign generally fits into the squad quickly. Right now, they signed Luis. He's fit into the squad. He started scoring goals. So this is what happens when it's a well-oiled machine. Whichever new component comes in, he knows what they have to do. He knows his job role, and that's about it. And I think that's the beauty of Liverpool as of now. So I in fact, when you said that Bayern Munich are your favorites, I wasn't expecting that. I think the Champions League is coming back to England. And I feel it's either going to be Man City or Liverpool.
You know, Malu, a couple of years ago, we were chatting about how, you know, oh man, the English teams are not what they used to be. They're really struggling. And now, like the last three seasons, we've had so many teams from England being in the later stages. And now eight teams, three English teams, right? That's incredible. Three English teams, just one Spanish team, one German team, three Spanish teams as well. Villarreal,
that's the beauty of Europe, right? There's always a cycle. Sometimes it'll be English, then Spanish, then Italian. There was a time when Germany, you had Dortmund, Schalke and Bayern. So I think there are all these cycles. So yeah, I think it's the English cycle right now. Unfortunately, United are nowhere to be seen. But yeah,
either of our teams are in the cycle, but England as a whole is doing well. Malu, let's finish off with the tough questions. You know, we don't want to just make it easy and get to comment on all the teams. Malu, who are your finalist picks? Who is the winner of the UCL this year?
Final. Okay, so then let's draw the map. So if Real Madrid versus Chelsea, so I personally think it's going to be Real Madrid.
Okay.
And then they go into, it's Atletico versus Man City. I think Man City should win.
Okay.
So I'm thinking semi-finals will be Real Madrid versus Man City. And on the other side is going to be Liverpool versus Bayern.
But Malu, is it not a draw again? Is it a...
No.
Oh, it's not a draw.
It's only quarterfinal. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
So I think semi-final will be Liverpool-Bayern and Man City-Real Madrid. And dude, this is so hard. Although I feel the Champions League is coming to England. But then at the semi-final stage, anything can happen. Okay, so pick my final. Actually, I think it's going to be Liverpool versus Real Madrid. Yeah, just because I don't want Liverpool to win. So I hope Real Madrid win. But in my head, I think this season is going to be Liverpool. That's what I think.
Wow, I did not expect that answer, Malu. That is, I definitely expected you to have at least either City or Bayern. But Interesting choice. I mean, if it is Real Madrid, I'll be happy with the Real Madrid Liverpool final. We remember the last one was pretty entertaining. Cough, cough, Karius. Yes. If you remember what happened.
Yes.
I am actually going very different from you. So listen, I make 98% of my predictions are wrong. Like I said, Liverpool, I said, may struggle out of the group stage. They go 18-0. But this one predictions is still possible to come true, which is a Bayern Munich Manchester City final, which is what I think I predicted in one of our initial episodes right at the start of the season. So I'm going to stick with it because now it's just, I'm pig-headed and I want at least one of my predictions in two of our seasons to be correct. I'm going to stick with it and I'm going to say Pep gets it done. Finally, Pep gets it done for Man City and brings home a Champions League for City, his first after Barcelona. I think it's time to get done. It'll be cool to do it against his former team. I think he'll finally make it happen. And it's just, this City team is beautiful to watch. I love watching City and Liverpool. And I think, you know, I think he's kind of earned it. Malu, one final question, then we can head out. Which fixture do you think has the highest probability of a surprise of these quarterfinals? Which one do you think is the highest chance of like something weird possibly happening?
I think Atletico versus City has a possibility because Atletico are a team that no matter how bad they are having as a season, they are a team you have to always be wary of. These guys can really, really cause damage. So I think that's one fixture that could lead to an upset. Who are the other teams? So it's Liverpool versus Benfica. I don't think there would be an upset out there.
Villarreal, Bayern.
Yeah, I don't see an upset out there. So and Real Madrid, Chelsea, I wouldn't say if any team gets knocked out, it's an upset because both teams are very, very good. So yeah, the only upset I see could be Man City getting knocked out by Atletico.
Same here. It's really hard to see any of the others struggling at all. Apparently, in the betting odds, it's like Real Madrid are slight favorites, but it's so tiny that, you know, it's not a significant difference. So I'm going to make the same pick. I think Atletico is always a threat. They've been to the Champions League final now a couple of times under Simeone. Yeah. They can always be dangerous. So I'm not going to bet against Liverpool again. I'm not going to make that mistake again. But with that, Malu, thanks so much for your time again today. Great talking with you. For all those listening, let us know your thoughts, both on maybe the action that's happening from a sporting perspective with regards to Russian and Belarusian athletes. Any other sports you'd like for us to talk about in terms of what, you know, sports are doing to deal with that situation or anything else you'd like to add to the conversation. As well as the Champions League, let us know who your favorite teams are, what fixtures you're excited for, who you think are going to be finalists, who you think are underdogs, who do you think is overrated, anything and everything, do let us know in the comments. If you enjoy this episode, do like the episode, share it with other people who you think might enjoy it. With that, signing off, and we'll catch you again next week. Take care. Bye.
Bye, guys.
If you like this episode, make sure to leave a like and share it with anyone else who might be interested. You can also subscribe on any social media platform that you prefer, and all our links are in the bio. We also have a website with all our episodes as well as blogs and a whole lot of other sports content, so make sure to check that out as well.